Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday morning, the 27th of September. Our guest this hour says the vast majority of our political leaders and journalists simply are not making the critical connection between America's huge trade deficit with China and the reality that over 25 million of our citizens cannot find a decent job. Peter Navarro is in Milwaukee today to show his new film, Death by China. We'll talk about that showing a little later in the hour. He's a professor in the School of Business at the University of California, Irvine. He's author of The Coming China Wars. He's a regular on CNBC, featured on 60 Minutes, and writes widely on trade issues. He made this film, he says, because as an economist and father, he has never been more concerned about America's future, unless each of us as consumers and voters, he says, first clearly understand and then squarely confront our destructive trade relationships with the rapidly rising China, we as a nation are doomed. Before we meet Peter, let's hear a little bit from the trailer of his film, which will be shown tonight, Death by China.
I was laid off three times within 6 months until I was permanently laid off.
I graduated with my bachelor's and I haven't been able to find anything.
Jobs disappear, and the way the economy is going right now, it's tough to find a job.
When the workers in China are being abused, then workers in America have a tougher time competing against them.
5.5 million manufacturing jobs gone.
57,000 manufacturing facilities closed in this nation.
Some of the workers at companies, literally their last act at the factory was to unbolt the machine and load it up to be shipped off to China.
Peter Navarro, thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you for having me, Kathleen. What a wonderful, wonderful city you have. I'm just so impressed with Milwaukee.
It is a nice city, isn't it? Yeah, I'm glad you're here. It's a great place that not many people know about.
You know, I've been doing this swing state tour with the film Ohio and then Michigan, and I came over on the boat yesterday from Muskegon, and coming in and seeing the city as kind of a dot on the horizon and seeing it kind of emerge with the nice skyline, with the new art building, mm-hmm. with the stadium, and it just, I mean, it's just wonderful. And the other thing that's so impressive about Milwaukee is the infrastructure, and all you would have to do is bring back some of our manufacturing base to cities like Milwaukee and Cleveland, Cincinnati, and this region would be the center of this country.
And you have said that the reason that we have lost our competitive edge is because China is allowed to cheat.
Exactly, and let me explain that. I mean, what the Death by China film does is it takes in a historical look at the U.S.-China trade relationship, and it goes back to the year 2001 when a Democratic president and a Republican Congress basically got China into the World Trade Organization, and that basically allowed China to flood our markets with illegally subsidized exports. What was supposed to happen was that China was supposed to abide by a certain set of rules. They weren't supposed to manipulate their currency. They weren't supposed to engage in export subsidies. They were supposed to abide by intellectual property rules so they wouldn't steal our stuff. And instead, they did just the opposite. And the statistics, Kathleen, are really startling. If you look kind of at the 10,000 feet level, you see a dramatic break in our growth in our economy, our gross domestic product. In the 5.5 decades prior to China joining the WTO, we grew at a rate of 3.5% a year. Life was good. Once we hit 2001 and China began first devastating our textile and furniture industries in the South and then moved to the Midwest and beyond, our growth rate has fallen annually to 1.6%. So the difference between 3.5% and 1.6%, that slow growth causes about 2 million jobs a year and over 20 million jobs we failed to create over this decade, which is about what we need to put America back to work. And if you look at just any measure of what China's doing, everybody says they're cheating, but nobody seems to want to do anything about it, and it's really devastating to this economy.
And what about the number of U.S. companies and corporations, Peter, that have moved jobs to China? How significant has that been?
Well, that's the whole game in a way. I mean, there's this great moment in the film where President Clinton, in lobbying for China's entry into our markets, basically says, for the first time, American companies will be able to produce on American soil and sell into the Chinese market, which will be the biggest in the world. In fact, that didn't happen. What we had really was a political shell game going on behind the scenes. The big multinational companies based here in the U.S., Boeing, Caterpillar, GM, GE, and so on, were basically lobbying for China to get in there so that they could offshore their production to China, take advantage of the cheap currency, the illegal subsidies, the lax environmental regulations, the lack of any labor unions, and then sell back into America, basically sell back into America. So it's a double hit. We've got state-run Chinese companies in China making products using illegal subsidies to flood our markets, and we've got American companies taking advantage of the same scheme, also flooding our market. So, you know, the biggest victim, the two villains in the film are the Chinese government and these American multinational companies, and the biggest victims are both the American people and the Chinese people, who suffer from incredibly abusive working conditions and incredibly horrific environmental conditions.
It can't be any fun to work for these companies in China. The conditions do sound horrendous, and they don't, even though we've paid attention, a little attention to those conditions over the last few years, they don't seem to be getting much better.
Well, there's two things to say about it. I mean, first of all, one of the big flaws of the free trade arrangement we have with China, with the World Trade Organization, is that the WTO rules are completely silent on both worker abuses and environmental abuses. So a Chinese company can basically dump anything it wants into the water and into the air. It can keep its workers essentially locked up for 16-hour days, 7 days a week, in dormitory-style conditions. And our factories here in Milwaukee and Cincinnati and Columbus, wherever, we have no recourse. They can do that, and we allow them to do that. So the other thing to say about the worker issue is you take, for example, the Apple factories over there, which are run through a Taiwanese company called Foxconn on Chinese soil. I mean, Apple has 25,000 people working here in the U.S., and it's Cupertino, and it's kind of like research and design corporate offices. Over there, there's 700,000 people making our iPads and iPhones, 700,000. Now, those factories, Kathleen, are the best China has to offer, okay? The best. But still, they've got, that's the 16-hour day, 7 days a week. If you go in and look at the dorms, you go in a typical room, there's bunk beds stacked to the ceiling, 8, 12, 16 people in a room, and you see suicide nets rimming the high-rise buildings because workers feel like just rats in a cage. And I don't know if you noticed in the news just a couple of days ago, 2,000 of these workers at a Foxconn plant making iPads basically rioted, and they sent in, it's kind of like the old days when there was trouble at Ford without union protection, and the Pinkertons came in back in, I think it was the 20s. Mm-hmm. 5,000 Chinese stormtrooper police went in, and we'll assume that they did not treat the 2,000 protesters roughly, but that's the world we live in, and the people of Milwaukee, the people of Wisconsin, the people of this country should not be forced to compete against a country that cheats and that abuses both its workers and environment. There's a great line in the film by Carolyn Bartholomew. I think you heard in the trailer, you know, when the workers in China are abused, American workers have a tougher time competing.
There's, I'd like for you to comment on this news in Wisconsin today and what the significance of this is. 18 state companies are making presentations this week, actually, and a number of these investors met in the governor's office yesterday or the day before as part of a tour of several U.S. cities that began in Dallas last week. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is hosting the Wisconsin leg of the tour, also launched in Wisconsin a marketing and branding campaign to promote the benefits of starting, expanding, or locating a business in the state. What do you make of that, Chinese investment in the U.S.?
Well, there's a gentleman named Ralph Gomery who appears in the film, and basically what he says that it's very dangerous for us to owe $3 trillion to the Chinese because basically it allows them to buy up pieces of America one piece at a time. I mean, the corporations who go over to China, some of them go over there naively, but the politicians here in this country who somehow think that the China kind of inviting Chinese corporations over here is going to be a good thing are really mistaken. The likely scenario is the Chinese company will buy one of our American companies that has some innovation, some technology that would allow that company in America basically to do well. The Chinese are more likely to just strip those companies of their technology and ship it back to the mainland and then use it against us. So there's no palliative here. There's absolutely, we've seen China go around the world, whether it's Africa, Latin America, now the U.S. and Europe. Every time they come in and basically buy assets in a country, it does not end well.
Hmm. Over the past, there have been various campaigns, as you well know, to buy American, and that will take care of some of this. I would think this might be really hard because it's hard to buy some products that are made in America. Everything is made in China. Is this a part of the equation, or do we have to go another route?
You know, that's a great question, Kathleen. And there's a wonderful character in the Death by China film, Judith Samuelson. She's the wife of the famous Newsweek, Washington Post columnist, and she in the film she talks about how she just got fed up with China's currency manipulation and everything else, and she stopped buying stuff. So she couldn't find a microwave oven that wasn't made in China. So now the Samuelson household is without. I mean, that is the dilemma we face. But she also says that if everybody stopped or reduce their purchases of made-in-China products, there'd be a shot heard around the world. I greatly sympathize with the problem that you really, I mean, for a lot of things, you can't buy anything that's not made in China. But what does that say about America's future, that if we can't buy anything not made in China? So what we try to do in the film, Richard Trumka, who's the president of the AFL-CIO, I ask him one point during the film, you know, what do you want people to think about when they go into a Walmart? Cheap prices? No, it's like think about your job, think about your safety, think about, and this is important for a state like Wisconsin, think about the tax base that has been lost because of the loss of the manufacturing base. And another cast member of the film, Gordon Chang, I think he says it quite well. Yeah, things are cheap at Walmart, but you have to understand the consequences.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we're getting many of them for our guests. And we'll also hear, this has been a subject on the campaign trail, so we'll hear from Governor Mitt Romney and from President Obama, who were campaigning yesterday in Ohio and mentioned China. Romney, that China is a currency manipulator, we'll hear what he had to say, and also the president who was speaking at a press conference actually in March about our trade relationship to China. So it's being discussed. We'll have our guest analyze that. Peter Navarro is our guest. He is latest film, his first documentary here, is Death by China. It's also a best-selling book. He is professor in the School of Business at the University of California, Irvine, and he is also a commentator who's heard widely, and he writes for all kinds of major publications. He is, for those of you in the Milwaukee area, this film, or beyond Milwaukee, will be shown tonight. I know it's an important subject matter. for the country and for many of you, and you'll be interested in his perspective on this. It's at the Rosebud Cinema, which has thankfully reopened here in the city of Milwaukee tonight at 6:45, and it will all be also be shown Saturday and Sunday at noon. So you may want to partake of that discussion and see the film tonight at 6:45. 2 year phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. You can also leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, or our Twitter handle is @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we start our phone calls. Oh, I should tell you our number two of our program. John Katz has a new book. I read most of it last night. For those of you who are dog lovers, you can't miss the show. The stories are just lovely and make you cry and make you laugh. The book has, it's worth buying just to get the picture of the dog on the cover. He's such a darling. Dancing Dogs, Stories, 16 Short Stories. John Katz will be with us, hour two of our show. All right, Jim in Pleasant Prairie is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning. What an honor it is to be on with this, this guest, addressing this humongously important problem. I guess Niall Ferguson, the very famed economist, has used the term chimerica to describe how our economies have become interwound. It sounds like the guest is doing an excellent job of identifying the problems. I think there are solutions. Unfortunately, there are none of them are quick fix, and so our politicians, realizing that we want quick fixes, ignore them. But take the positive example of Germany, that has both better educational standards for its public in general, and probably better environmental standards than we do. this education gap, there again, is a long-term solution, not a quick one. I see international standards, possibly through the United Nations, for enforcement of environmental standards and working and living conditions for the employees in places like China.
All right, let's get a response. Peter.
Sure. First of all, solutions. I think that the best thing that both presidential candidates could promise right now are a couple of things. One is that we would adopt a policy of balanced trade by the year 2020. It gives us 8 years, basically, to reduce a trade deficit, which mathematically is now costing us anywhere from 1.5 to 2 percentage GDP points a year. In other words, it's costing us over 1 million jobs we don't create. This debate, Kathleen, between the candidates, which you're going to play a little later, over currency manipulation that Romney wants to crack down versus kind of this case-by-case approach that President Obama is pushing is very interesting, because what we need, if you brand China a currency manipulator, you would basically have a global solution to at least part of the problem, because that would require then countervailing duties equal to the undervalued currency, which is anywhere from 25 to 40%. It's huge. And that would benefit all industries in America, whereas what President Obama has been doing thus far is just helping a few industries through these cases. Germany is fascinating because 25% of the women and men working in Germany are in manufacturing. That has fallen to 9% here in the United States. And Leo Hendry in the film makes the very strong point that unless we get back to 25% of our women and men making things here, we will not be able to recover over the long term.
Tell me more what you mean by a balanced trade plan.
Yeah, this is here's the way economies, all economies work. You have the gross domestic product, which is your yardstick of growth, and it's driven by only four things. It's driven by consumption and government spending, which we've been doing too much of, and it's unsustainable. It's also driven by domestic investment and the difference between how much we export and how much we import. So when you run a trade deficit, it's purely from a mathematical point. It subtracts points from the gross domestic product. And then at the same time, when you have our American multinational companies go over to China, that suppresses the I. So that's the structural problem we're facing. And balanced trade basically means not running a trade deficit anymore. And if we were to do that, mathematically, we would recover anywhere from 1 to 2 percentage points of GDP growth. And in the process of balancing trade, we would also boost domestic investment here, because that policy of balanced trade would inevitably entail having companies come back to places like Milwaukee and invest here instead of in Chengdu or Shanghai or Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Jim, thanks for the call. Kenneth and Custer, hi.
Yes. Who's benefiting from all of this? I mean, in this country, somebody voted for this and is evidently benefiting from this.
That's a great question. And here's the deal. Politicians need votes every 2, 4, or 6 years, depending on whether you're a congressman, a president, or a senator. Every other day of the year, they need money to basically run their campaigns that they eventually run. And the problem here is that a lot of the money comes from precisely the big multinational corporations here who have a vested interest in the China trade. So who's benefiting? It's very clear. It's companies like Boeing and Caterpillar that go over to China and are able to produce more cheaply by taking advantage of the kind of illegal trade matrix you have over there. So they clearly benefit. The politicians benefit only to the extent that the campaigns are funded by these multinational interests, but literally everybody else suffers. Everybody else suffers. And that's why, you know, at the outset when Kathleen introduced the whole thing, I mean, she made the point that the media is not getting it, our political leaders don't want to get it, and we have to connect the dots as a country between the misery and pain and job loss here in this country and our trade relationship with China.
You know, and the Democratic Party has been big proponents of a lot of these trade agreements. Bill Clinton was a very big proponent. It's not as though we can say there's one party to blame for all of this. As you suggest, they're all getting money from these corporations.
The film is fiercely nonpartisan. You'll never see another film that has both Tim Ryan, a Democrat from Ohio, and Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey, in the same film agreeing about the same issue. But, you know, there's a great line in the film, Clinton, vintage 1992, and I've always been a big fan of Bill Clinton, but I thought what he's done with this one particular issue is the worst mistake of his career. He's pounding on the table in the convention, the Democratic convention, for the first time. He says American companies must act like American companies again, exporting products, not jobs. That was 1992, and what the film just shows is that these multinational companies have had their way with us. I mean, you got General Motors; they take TARP money, right? We save them, and it's one of the things. Oh, we've saved GM. Well, what have we saved GM to do? Yeah, we've saved for some jobs here, but literally all their new factories, are being established in China, and worse than that, a lot of their research and development facilities are going there as well, which is the seed corn of our new jobs. It's insanity. And if we can just get people to watch this film, learn about the issue, and rise up, I think that would be all to the good.
Kenneth, thanks for the call. Michael in Milwaukee, hi.
Morning. One of the things that's complicating this China or made in China problem right now is the fact that in past recessions or slowdowns in the economy, factories were not torn down as they are now. They were just shuttered, and then they could reopen them. Over the last 10 years, my job went to Mexico, and 10 years ago, I worked at A.O. Smith Power Automotive. That facility is gone. My brother worked at Delphi. That facility is gone.
Yes.
All across the country, manufacturing facilities have been torn down, and in the most part, usually turned into shopping malls or strip malls.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is, local municipalities, at least in the Milwaukee area, if you look at West Dallas, West Milwaukee, Oak Creek, these local municipalities do not like manufacturing. They are delighted to see manufacturing go, and they can't get these buildings torn down fast enough, and they just love strip malls for whatever reason. And that's another part of this problem.
And you know, it's worse than that, because many times when these factories are actually torn down, the machinery is put in boxes and actually shipped over to China and then used in manufacturing basically against us. I was in Mansfield, Ohio, and I was doing a town hall there. And by the way, tonight when they show the film, I'm going to have a town hall afterwards. I'll be there. But I was in Mansfield, and there's this thing called the AK Steel Plant. And you look at it, and its property is probably almost a mile across, okay? But you can cut that in half. And on one side, all you've got is weeds and broken concrete, where that cold finishing steel mill was literally boxed up and shipped off to China. I was at Wright State University down in Dayton, Ohio. Same thing with a high-tech company. This guy, this engineer, gets up in front of 200 people and explains how his semiconductor company was basically literally boxed up and sent off to China. So, yeah, we're getting these malls and losing our factories, but it's like a double whammy when those factories are then used against us.
Yeah. You'll probably be familiar with this story. The bridge, what was the bridge in California that Governor Arnold said was going to be rebuilt,
sure.
And they had it. They shipped the work to China, but they didn't know how to do the work.
Yeah. There's a great scene in the film where this guy, Tom Danchik, talks about how China is the highest cost producer, and get this, highest cost producer of steel in the world, but it charges the lowest price in world markets. How does it do that? As Danchik explains, it's all due to these illegal export subsidies. And by the way, I don't want to be going across the Bay Bridge in San Francisco running on Chinese steel, because a lot of that stuff is inferior products, and that's another thing that we talk about in a section of the film that's called Death by Chinese Junk. I mean, in fact, there's this one wonderful character in the film, this blue-collar guy. He says, they're not only ruining our economy, they're poisoning our children with the toys they sell us.
So you're worried about these bridges? That'll get
people scared. Yeah, look, you've seen buildings and bridges collapse in China because of inferior construction materials. That's well documented. And yes, the thing about the way the Chinese relationship works, for example, let's take the toys, right? That would happen with Mattel, where they had to recall a million toys because of defects in lead. Okay.
Right.
Now, Mattel had been there in China for 20 years or more and had established a fairly good relationship with those factories initially. What many unscrupulous Chinese entrepreneurs will do is that you enter the contract the first, second, and third time, they give you really good products, and then after that they begin altering the materials in the products to shave pennies. Okay, tire case in my book Death by China, where they took out a critical piece of a valve to save a penny, and it dramatically increased the probability of tire blowouts. The pets, I don't know if anyone in Milwaukee, I'm sure this happened, they lost their pet to the poison pet food from China. That was the product of Chinese entrepreneurs substituting an ingredient with cheaper melamine, which actually kills pets' kidneys. Same thing happened to humans with heparin. They substituted. So my point is that it's not that they don't know how to make quality steel sometimes. It's also that they're willing to alter the product to save bucks, and it's often not picked up by the inspectors.
Thanks, Michael, very much for the call. Nathan in North Freedom, hi.
Hello. This is a wonderful topic. I just wanted to mention that we have to remember, you know, China is actually a communist country, and they're not our friends.
Indeed.
I understand that, you know, even some of our military equipment is being made in China. China owns most of our debt, as we all know. If China should ever turn on us, what would we do? You know, we're not even in a position to produce our own military equipment.
Yeah, what a wonderful insight. And there's a couple of things in the Death by China film. Ian Fletcher, who's just absolutely brilliant, talks about how we can't put a single plane in the sky right now without having some components made in China. And on the communist totalitarian issue, there's a fellow named Harry Wu who actually steals the show in the movie. This gentleman is just so powerful. He was a prisoner in a forced labor camp for 19 years, and he explains how on a regular basis products like rubber boots and buttons and Christmas lights are made in forced labor camps and wind up in places like Walmart. He says China's a dynasty, no republic, not people's country. And we really have to understand that, because as Gordon Chang says in the film, China is the only major country in the world preparing to kill Americans. And, you know, when we go into Walmart, a few cents on every dollar we buy on that made in China stuff goes into a military budget that really is designed to basically project Chinese power in Asia.
So what would have been, Peter, the motivating force for the companies that made those components for airlines to move to China? And the second part of the question is, what would it take? And I know some companies, Jennifer Granholm has been big on this, have come back to the United States. What does it take to bring those component makers for the airlines companies back?
Well, on the first question, Kathleen, the answer is rather chilling, because a lot of the components that are now being made that go in to American military fighters and domestic commercial liners are not being made by American companies on Chinese soil. They're being made by state-run Chinese enterprises, and they're able to do that because they've either been given the technology by American multinationals or they've stolen it. And so, you know, that's what we're up against. And if you put, for example, a computer chip in a military aircraft, there are the dangers of what we call Trojans or viruses that can wind up in there. On the reshoring issue, I'm all for that. But when our politicians tell us that that's the panacea, that's really a fantasy world. There's some tiny bit of reshoring going on, but until we level the playing field, with China, American manufacturers don't really stand a chance. You can't compete against a currency that's 40% undervalued, 17% illegal export tax rebates, and those abusive worker and environmental conditions. There's a wonderful story in the film, Catalina. Dan Slane talks about how in 2001, as a furniture manufacturer in Bowling Green, he was forced to either shut his company down or go over to China. And so he went over to China and opened three factories, and he immediately began dumping furniture products into the United States, selling them at or slightly below his own costs in China. But he was able to make a huge profit, because every month he got a 17% check from the Chinese government, and that was an illegal export tax rebate, totally forbidden by World Trade Organization rules, but nobody in this country cracks down on that.
Devin Lodi writes, this is an email, my husband's company was closed in 2000 after getting involved with a Chinese factory. They had no ethics. This involved Christmas tree lights. The Chinese response when the lights caught on fire and had other electrical issues was to close their company and then go somewhere else and open up another company. No way lawyers could sue them or fine them. They didn't care. My husband was on the front line, and we paid people to go through every light we had purchased from them to verify they were safe before we sold them.
What an incredible story, and what a common story. It happens all the time. I mean, it's kind of like the movie Caddyshack, where you're trying to hit the gopher. In this case, you know, trying to pin liability on a fly-by-night Chinese company is virtually impossible. Even if you can find them, you really can't prosecute them in the Chinese courts, and it's very, very difficult to hold American companies who bought those products accountable. So the consumer's at risk and the entrepreneurs are at risk as well.
Peter Navarro is our guest this hour. His film Death by China will be shown tonight at 6:45 at the Rosebud Cinema, which is located in Wauwatosa. For those of you who may be interested, there will be a discussion of the film after the showing tonight, which should be highly interesting, and then it will be shown again on Saturday and Sunday. He has a book by the same name, Death by China. He is a professor in the School of Business at the University of California, Irvine. We did mention Mitt Romney and his thoughts about currency manipulation and President Obama, and we have yet to talk about his thoughts about our trade relationship to China. We'll listen to them. This, of course, is a presidential year, as if you didn't know that. And does it make a difference who has a policy that's better in all of this? Or has anybody outlined anything that's worth a hill of beans? We will play some of their comments and have Peter respond to this. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. The Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, where we'll put the trailer to the film, too, so you can see a little bit of the trailer. And we'll be with you again in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, John Katz has a new book. It's a collection of short stories. They are just lovely. Dancing Dog Stories. And actually, one of the stories is about dancing dogs. It's a good one. John will be with us the second hour of the program. Because this is, we're getting down to the wire here on the presidential campaign. We wanted to hear from clips from what the presidential, when the president won the challenger, have said about China and have our guest respond. This is Mitt Romney, who was campaigning in Ohio yesterday. I'll play these and then we'll have Peter respond. Mitt Romney in Ohio.
One of the nations that has cheated over the years has been China. They've artificially held down the value of their currency. And by doing that, the prices of their products are artificially low. And when their prices are low and then they compete with our manufacturers, our guys go out of business and people lose jobs.
And this is President Obama speaking at a press conference in March about our trade relationship with China.
The key is to make sure that the playing field is level. And frankly, sometimes it's not. I will always try to work our differences through with other countries. We prefer dialogue. That's especially true when it comes to key trading partners like China. We've got a constructive economic relationship with China, and whenever possible, we are committed to working with them to addressing our concerns. But when it is necessary, I will take action if our workers and our businesses are being subjected to unfair practices.
Who makes sense there? Is there one or the other who's better on the issue?
Well, let me preface this by saying that I'm a Democrat, and the film is totally nonpartisan. But if you simply look at those two quotes, Romney has it exactly right, and Obama has it exactly wrong. And Obama has it wrong basically for two reasons. One, he says in that clip, we have a constructive economic relationship with China. We do not. We have a destructive economic relationship with China because they do, as Romney said, because they do cheat. The other thing that is so wrong about what President Obama is saying there, frankly, is that for 3.5 years, he's engaged with China on dialogue about these unfair trade practices, and the Chinese have simply turned a deaf ear to that. The problem is that China only understands strength. They don't understand dialogue when it's a monologue and weakness.
Mm-hmm. What's fair? What would be fair, Peter?
Fair is easy to say. In this case, China needs to stop undervaluing its currency. The currency thing is huge. Most countries of the world have what we call a floating currency, so their value fluctuates every day based on their trade deficit or surplus. And if you run trade a deficit, your currency is supposed to go down. That gives you more competitive advantage. You sell more exports, you buy fewer imports, and trade comes back into balance. China does not allow that to happen. They peg our currency, their currency, to ours, so that no matter how big the trade deficit goes, their currency never gets fairly valued. Fair is a fairly valued currency. Fair is abandoning the illegal export subsidies that they promised to abandon back in 2001. I mean, this is going to be going on for over a decade. Fair is not stealing the intellectual property of American companies. Fair is not forcing American companies, when they come over to China, to surrender their technology as a condition of entry into the market. Fair is allowing Chinese workers to organize, to have the right to fair working conditions. Fair to the people of China, 750,000 of which die every year from air pollution, is to have a set of national standards that don't allow companies to just willy-nilly throw whatever they want into the soil, the water, and the air. So China is so far from fair that dialogue isn't going to work, and the notion of a constructive economic relationship with China being the fact at this matter is just fantasy. So it hurts me to hear the president of this country be so wrong about this issue. And one of the reasons why I've been traveling around swing states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan, Virginia, is to try to elevate the understanding about this debate so both presidential candidates will get it right. Both presidential candidates will promise the people of this country to do the correct policy thing. And so far, we're not getting that.
What's fair to American workers?
Well, what's fair to American workers is to allow them to be able to compete in a world where they don't have to compete against not just workers who were abused, but a China. They're not competing against companies. They're not competing against the Chinese workers. They're competing against the Chinese government, as is pointed out in the film. I mean, American workers, European workers. Workers around the world there should be a certain level of standards recognized internationally, and countries should abide by them, because the broader problem with globalization is that if you don't have that, you have what's called a race to the bottom. Mm-hmm. You have a race to the worker abuse bottom. You have a race to the environmental pollution bottom, and that's exactly what we're seeing in China. I don't know, Kathleen, if you've ever been there.
Yes, I have, years ago.
Well, years ago, how was the pollution there years ago?
Well, they didn't have any cars. It was back in 1988,
okay.
I mean, 86, long time ago.
I mean, there's 100 cities. People in America need to understand the scale of this country. There's 100 cities over there with 1 million people or more, and virtually every one of them, if you go to the center of town, you can't see more than some 100 feet on some days. There's one famous city in China where the satellites couldn't find it because the shroud of pollution was so bad around it. I mean, cities literally disappear from satellites.
Goodness
so
gracious.
You know, what's fair to American workers? And it's not workers that we should focus on so much as American manufacturers, because it's the small and medium-sized domestic manufacturers here in places like Milwaukee. And a gentleman caller, he had it exactly right. These small and medium-sized factories, which get just devastated and then torn down, That's like the sinew of this country. And the reason why all this fiscal stimulus isn't working is because there's nothing for it to operate on. There's a great line in the film which goes, you know, the best jobs program is trade reform with China, and not government stimulus. And that's another thing these presidential candidates have to understand. You can't spend your way out of this problem. You can't create easy money at the Fed to basically stimulate in that way. The only way you can solve the problem of our economy in places like Wisconsin and the rest of this country is by leveling the playing field with the most egregious cheater in the world, which is China.
Facebook comment from Nathan. How about this idea? Tariffs based on environmental and labor standards as well as subsidies. The worse they get, the higher the tariff, the better, the lower the tariff. It is free market and it puts a price on bad acts.
The environmental tariffs are actually fairly easy to calculate. It's like, as an economist, I don't want this all to come down to tariffs, okay? But at the end of the day, tariffs are not protectionist when applied to China. They're simply self-defense. What we really need in this country is a political dialogue during this presidential election that recognizes the problem and basically addresses it in a way which allows both countries, the U.S. and China, to move forward. If you take, for example, Kathleen, just the currency issue, okay, a stronger currency would actually help China in the following sense. It would put purchasing power in the hands of their consumers, and the single greatest flaw in the Chinese economy right now is it's too export dependent. They need a robust consumer in order for them to have a less volatile economy. And so, with the Death by China film, I'm looking for kind of a global understanding of what's going on and specific solutions. And if we don't do that, as you said at the outset, we as an economy are not going to be able to prosper.
Renee in Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, I've got 2 points. One, I think America generally and the West generally do not understand the mentality of the Chinese. They don't look a year ahead. They don't look 10 years ahead. They basically think hundreds of years ahead. And this is basically a war, a continued war against the West. And in addition to that, the American corporations, they get into bed with the Chinese because they figure, okay, we can manufacture this stuff. We send it back to the United States and Europe, and we spend pennies, and we get back hundreds of dollars.
Peter.
Absolutely right. I mean, and the thing about the longer view, in the film, there's Dan Slain, who says basically that these CEOs, they think a quarter ahead, all they're looking out is for their bonuses, and they kick the can down the road. And the Chinese do have a longer time frame in terms of how they go about it. So, that caller is right on.
Kate in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, this is Kate calling from Milwaukee.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, I'm just calling with a personal story. My husband and I are local small business owners, and we've, of course, opened our business during this recession, and everyone thought we were insane because we used our own savings to open our business. And it was very important to my husband and I that when we were looking for product to stock our shelves, that we wanted as much Made in America product as possible. So our customers love when they come into our store that we've done the work for them, and we're 65 to 85% Made in America products.
Good for you, Kate.
Depending on what has sold during that week.
What kind of store is it, Kate?
It is the Brass Rooster, the men's hat store in Bayview.
Mm-hmm.
And in this past year alone, we were able to have such an amazing growth that now we've moved into small manufacturing. And we were able to purchase 100-year-old equipment from Detroit for hat making.
Oh, my.
Where so much of the hat making equipment has gone over to China, and we were able to continue this lost art. Something else I'd like to point out, too, about our American-made vendors is they have also taken great responsibility as importers and consumers And one of our manufacturers in Pennsylvania, the Bowman Hat Company, has a campaign that is called American Made Matters. And that goes on all of their products that they import from China. And they are very particular about the standards and that it does not reflect in a negative way of what they're manufacturing in their American plant in Pennsylvania.
Okay, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time. It's a, this, here's a positive story, Peter.
Great. It's a great story. I love it. And as well as her company is doing, she would rule the world if we were able to level the playing field with China. But good for her, and we need that kind of thing going on.
You would rule the world as well. Finally, we got about 30 seconds left. One of our callers, Mike from Appleton, asked this question. What can consumers do to help?
Okay, basically they can... when they pick up any product and it says made in China, put it down. Think about your job. Think about your safety. Think about the tax revenues that we're not getting. And there would be, as Judith Samuelson says in the film, a shot heard around the world. And, you know, do me a favor out there. Go to the Death by China website. Look at the trailer. Share that with everybody. That's something you can do to build awareness. And I'd love to see everybody in Milwaukee at the film tonight. The town hall meetings we've been having, Kathleen, are as great as this show. We have people like Kate coming in and telling their heartfelt stories, and that's really useful because it helps get the word out.
Thank you, Peter, so much. Join us again. Peter Navarro, he's professor at the School of Business at the University of California. He's the writer and director of Death by China, which will be shown tonight at the Rosebud Cinema. A discussion will follow. Judging from the number of phone calls we've received and the number of messages, there's a lot of interest in this, and it should be a rip-roaring good discussion. That's at 6:45 tonight. The film also shown Saturday and Sunday. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your interest and participation. Conversation coming up with John Katz.